Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today, we continue our series on chronic disease health and prevention by discussing Native American food sovereignty and improving diets with Native American ancestral foods. Today's guests, Lois Ellen Frank and Walter Whitewater, have been cooking and working together since the early 1990s. Their mission is to educate people on the history of Native American cuisine and the contributions that Native peoples have given to some of the foods we eat every day: corn, beans, squash, chili, tomatoes, potatoes, vanilla, and cacao. They call these foods the Magic Eight. Prior to 1492, these foods only existed in the Americas. The history you will learn in this book and on today's show is fascinating and so important, especially now. Lois Ellen Frank and Walter Whitewater write about Native American cuisine with a modern twist and also share 100 plant-based recipes in their new book, Seed to Plate, Soil to Sky: Modern Plant-Based Recipes Using Native American Ingredients. The book also focuses on food sovereignty and sustainability. Lois Ellen Frank is a Native foods historian, educator, and chef and owner of Red Mesa Cuisine, a catering company in Santa Fe, New Mexico. They work in Native American communities all over the Southwest, teaching cooking classes to community members with their Native Food for Healthy Life, Healthy Native American Ancestral Foods for Contemporary Health and Wellness cooking and lecture series featuring Native plant-based foods. Walter Whitewater is Diné from the Navajo Nation. He is a chef at Red Mesa Cuisine and winner of the James Lewis Award for his work as a Native American chef. And we will have Lois Ellen Frank and Walter Whitewater with us in just a few minutes. Now, this book is so important and so interesting because in addition to the recipes that they share, they also have so much fascinating history in this book. And they say that a lot of people do not know about tomatoes and potatoes and vanilla, that prior to 1492, these foods only existed in the Americas. They also have a very interesting timeline of Native American cuisine. There are four distinct food periods that make up this cuisine. First, the pre-contact period, beginning from over 20,000 years ago and evolving until contact with Europeans. They write, "The people from this period used petroglyphs and pictographs to document historical events such as epidemics, food shortages, droughts, and other important events such as how to harvest, how to plant, what to plant, etc. This vital information is part of a form of indigenous science called traditional ecological knowledge, and that's passed down through generations via traditional songs, stories, and beliefs. It's the foundation of Native communities today. Traditional ecological knowledge is a form of food sovereignty that includes food security and environmental justice, and it really connects Native peoples to their lands and their community." And so that's the first part of the four distinct food periods. And we also learn about extensive trade routes that have been documented, especially with Mesoamerica. Primarily dried goods were traded. They write in their book that this is, again, so interesting. In 2009, an analysis of ceramics in Pueblo Bonito, the largest site in Chaco Canyon in northwestern New Mexico, documented for the first time the presence of theobromine, a marker for cacao or chocolate. And this indicates that cacao was consumed in the American Southwest around AD 1000 to 1125. So fascinating history in this new book, Seed to Plate, Soil to Sky: Modern Plant-Based Recipes Using Native American Ingredients. Items like seeds, shells, beads, turquoise, and feathers were also traded between the tribes in this region and the tribes in the South. And in the book, Lois Ellen Frank, with culinary advisor Walter Whitewater, who will be on our show soon, says that the pre-contact period is probably the most diverse and most important part of Native American cuisine, Activities related to foods were and still are central to so many Native communities in the Southwest. What are now classified as art forms in these communities were originally made for purposes centered around food. And Chef Walter, and we'll talk about this when he joins our show today, he says that these plants are not picked randomly or wastefully. In the Navajo way of being, the Diné direct a prayer to the plant to explain why its neighbor will be harvested. An offering is made, and then the harvester picks only what they need to use, which is such a beautiful concept, especially in our throwaway culture today and consume, consume, consume. There is just another way of living, and Native people have been living like this for thousands of years. After the plant is harvested and then prepared into food, the plant remains are put back into the earth with a final prayer. And a good example of this are the corn husks used to cook corn in the oven. So they write about the history of these incredible foods in this new book, Seed to Plate, Soil to Sky, Modern Plant-Based Recipes Using Native American Ingredients. And we are hoping to connect with Lois Ellen Frank, a Native foods historian, and Walter Whitewater, a Diné chef from the Navajo Nation, in just a couple of minutes. We're just having some problems with their phone line. But I just want to read from the book because it is so fascinating. In the section about history, they also write about the first contact period with foods introduced to Native communities from Europe after 1492. In the 1500s, the Spanish entered the American Southwest from Mexico. In 1540, the Spanish conquistador Francisco Vasquez de Coronado and his party arrived at the cornfields of Zuni Pueblo, demanding food, and the departure of Pueblo life as they had known it had begun. And the Spanish changed the traditional way of life and drastically altered an ancestral food history that would never be the same. They write, probably the biggest and most profound introduction was that of domesticated animals and their byproducts. So this is really easy to forget that these domesticated animals were not part of the Americas because Native peoples only hunted wild game. There was no dairy, no cows. And so this is just another piece of history that they write about in this beautiful book. It's I love this book because they share 100 beautiful recipes, but as I've been reading, they also share so much important history at a time when the Trump administration is trying to erase the non-white history of the Americas. So a book like this is so important, especially now. And I believe that we are now connected to Lois Ellen Frank, Native foods historian, educator, chef and owner of Red Mesa Cuisine, and Walter Whitewater, a Diné chef at Red Mesa Cuisine and winner of the James Lewis Award for his work as a Native American chef. Hi, Lois and Walter. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi.
Hi. We're so happy to be here. Thank you.
Well, it's great to have both of you, and thank you for this beautiful book. It's just so important, Walter, reading this history, learning about this history at a time when Trump and the people around him are trying to erase the non-white history of the Americas. I'm sure you didn't expect this, but this book is so incredibly timely right now.
Thank you.
Can you both talk about the importance of a book coming out like this right now?
Well, we actually started the book during COVID because we weren't able to deal with the general public. And so we thought we would test recipes and do a book. It took a little longer than we thought. So we started in 2020. The book came out in 2023, and we won two awards in 2024 with the International Association of Culinary Professionals in the category of health and wellness and food issues and matters. So we do feel really blessed. I think one of the benefits that came out of this was when we were testing the recipes, we really got to know our neighbors, and many of them were sheltered in and very scared. And so we fed them. They became tasters or eaters, and we fed them. We dropped off the food, put it in their mailbox. There were several seniors in our local radius of our personal kitchen, and we were feeding them as we tested recipes. So all around blessings, all around.
You reminded me of a show we recently did with Jonathan Nez, former president of the Navajo Nation. He was on talking about just how horrific COVID was on the Navajo Nation, but really also in Indian country. And you work with Jonathan and you know his story. He talked about how when he was 300 pounds, he was encouraging Navajo children to take care of them and exercise. And then a young person called him out saying, hey, you're not practicing what you're preaching. And of course, that hurt his feelings, but it changed his life. He transitioned to a plant-based diet and he's regained his health. It's really an incredible story. You just reminded me of that while you were talking, Lois, about COVID.
Yeah. And so we do advocate, like Jonathan Nez, to increase your plant intake. We like to call it plant forward, anywhere from 10 to 100% for health and wellness. And so any amount of increase in plants in your diet is very helpful. And do you want to say a couple of words about that, Wal?
Well, on my end, it's like mostly it was the food the book was done for is for health reason, you know, a concern. Because the Indian country, on the native country, it's a little different on the outside off the reservation. And it was a big, huge concern that we came up with this book, and not only just the food, creating the food, but I wanted to show what it looks like. And in a native world, you know, not everybody will really read it, but looking at the picture, especially for those elders and the one that's, you know, that lacking of education, and looking at a picture and just something that I wanted to show, this is how you can do it. And certain plants that we use, instead of raping the land of there's a wild carrots that we use, it's in the book. So I, instead of using that, I use western carrots that we use and from the farmer's market. And so utilizing that, certain things we had to think about, and what we wanted to show, and we didn't want people to go out raping the whole land or whatever it is that's grown out there. So things like that, at the same time, it educated me, and I'm sure for Lois too. So it was a big thing that we did, though. And then the people that we work with, and that helped too. So, you know, as long as we did, and you know, some of the people they shared with recipe, they're no longer around, and just something that they passed. And we wanted to put that in the book too. So that's how we came about with this.
Wow. Well, to your point, Walter, I mean, the photographs are gorgeous. I love the photo of the chocolate. Is it pinon? The chocolate pinon cake? That one is just absolutely beautiful. And Walter, you know, talking about how to gather these foods without raping the land, you both write in the book that in order to move forward to the future for health and wellness, everyone has to go back to the past to understand what happened, when it happened, and why it happened. And that is why it's so vital and important to understand the history of the past and investigate why the indigenous diet deviated from a healthy pre-contact diet, a diet that you call nativore diet, to the diet that exists today. So can you talk more about that?
You know, if we look back to the past, to this pre-contact, some native chefs like to say pre-colonial, and what we see is wild game. You are correct with your introduction. There was no dairy. You know, I always joke, did someone in some tribe somewhere try to milk a lactating wild animal? You know, maybe once, and then word spread really quickly that was not a viable option. That milk is for their babies. And so, you know, we look at small amounts of meat, you know, when you hunt or when you fish, everything was shared with the tribe or the community or the family. And so the consumption was small amounts of meat, very healthy wild game, and then lots of plants, nuts and fruits and wild greens, and then the cultivars. And, you know, the foundation to this new cookbook is what we call the Magic Eight. Eight ingredients that Native people shared with the world, changing world cuisine, right? And so these ingredients, corn, beans, and squash, also called the Three Sisters, chili, tomato, potato, vanilla, and cacao, didn't exist anywhere. And it's a brilliant science that Native people were able to cultivate and use these foods for health and wellness. So that's the foundation. Those are the eight chapters. But this diet was high in plants, high in protein, low in fat, no dairy, not a lot of saturated fats. Wild game, as we know, is very lean. It's only in this idea of mass production and the Western cultivation of animals that this, the deviation and you know, what we see now is just not sustainable. It's not sustainable. It's not ethical. And it's not a Native way of being.
Right.
It's really not a Native way to raise that many animals in conditions with antibiotics. It's horrific, to be honest.
Well, and in the book you write, what is so fascinating is that the average American today, even those who cook with these foods regularly, whether it's vanilla, cacao, tomatoes, or potatoes, do not know this history. Many people are unaware of the contribution Native peoples have made to the foods we eat every day. And you write, think about this. The Italians did not have the tomato until after 1492. The Irish didn't have the potato. In Britain, they had fish, but no chips. And it's so interesting, Lois, because people probably obviously know about squash and beans, but I'm guessing a lot of people don't know about tomatoes, potatoes, probably not vanilla and cacao.
Right. And vanilla is a magical story because the vanilla bean or the pod comes from an orchid, and the orchid is only fertile and can be fertilized by a special bee that only exists where vanilla originated. And it's only fertile from 4 to 24 hours, and the bee knows, and it pollinates. In all other areas of the world, so Madagascar and Indonesia and Tahiti, it has to be hand pollinated. And that's why vanilla is so expensive. But the fact that the elders, that the ancestors knew that this was just an essence and would become a major part, it's one of the most used dessert ingredients other than cacao on the planet.
Well, today we are talking about this beautiful new book, Seed to Plate, Soil to Sky, Modern Plant-Based Recipes Using Native American Ingredients with Lois Ellen Frank, a Native foods historian, educator, and chef and owner of Red Mesa Cuisine, a catering company in Santa Fe, New Mexico. They work in Native communities all over the Southwest. We're also joined by Walter Whitewater, a Diné from the Navajo Nation, who is a chef at Red Mesa Cuisine and winner of the James Lewis Award for his work as a Native chef. This beautiful book has already won a few awards. And if you have any questions or comments for Lois and Walter, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. In addition to sharing 100 plant-based recipes with beautiful photos, they also really share some incredible and important history. The history that you will learn in this book is fascinating and so important, especially now. Philip writes, I just learned that the Hopi Nation farmers, by using the methods and seeds that their ancestors have developed over the millennia, are able to grow corn and beans in a semi-arid area without any irrigation whatsoever. Our genetically modified corn would not grow in this area without artificially using tons of water. There is so much to learn for those of us who are willing. Yeah, what are your thoughts about that, Walter?
Your family. So Walter, he'll talk about his dad. It's called dry farming. Mm. And so Walter, his hometown is very close to Hopi, and they use a very similar technique. Why don't you talk about how your family farmed?
Well, what I've been raised on the reservation, that what I watched through my late grandfather, that he's, you know, used to work with seeds, and then grandma too, then my dad. And so it was not like irrigation or anything like that where we live. Everything's all dried the ground, and it was a dry farming. So some people, they plow, and then my dad always tell us that when you do that, you disturb the ground. And so there's certain ways that before they put the seeds in, they say a little prayer, or some people, if you know the planting song, they plant a song to go with it. So that's how they utilize working with the nature, and just something that they usually like have the corn soak for like a day or two. And then that's when it's been put down into the ground, and whatever it is that we grew, like pinto beans and some other things that will grow out on the Navajo reservation. And just depends on the soil, the way I look at it, and then how you want to take care of it, how you want it to. And you have to be there. One thing I know is you have to be there. You have to attend. It's just something that it's not going to grow. And then it's like, oh, it doesn't, you have to worry about
take
the animals.
Care of it. Yeah.
You have to worry about other things that comes with the certain things that comes with it.
The fascinating thing about this corn is it has what's called elongated roots. And the indigenous corn to this region, this area of the Southwest, the roots can go down 24 inches or more to where water is. And so when the rains come, it soaks down, and then these roots hold that, and the corn can grow, and the beans and the squash, mm-hmm. right? Yeah.
Well, thank you for that email, Philip. We have another email from a listener who asks if you can talk about the health of the soil and how that has changed over the years now that we have so many pesticides.
Oh, yes. It changed a lot. And that's why sometimes we have to we light the dry bush, and we light the fire to it. It purifies the ground. It purifies, you know, when you see forests, and what it does, it purifies the ground. And later, a new beginning starts off again.
Yeah, the nutrients from the ash goes into the soil.
And purifies
Native
it.
Farmers, Walter's family and many, the last question with the Hopi farmers, they're not using pesticides. This is a very Western invention that was initiated to use petrochemicals during World War II. So Native farmers, all the ones that we know, are dry farming or using sustainable irrigation methods with no pesticides. The many tribes don't even have a word for organic, because there was no distinction between something that was organic and something that was not. Mm. There, it's just not a Native philosophy and not a sustainable practice in Native farming.
Wow. This is so important to remember this, because we're just all so used to, you read the Dirty Dozen from the Environmental Working Group, what foods have the most pesticides, what don't. And to say that Native people don't even have a word for organic because it wasn't even needed, it's just so important to remember that. Today we are talking about a beautiful new book, Seed to Plate, Soil to Sky, Modern Plant-Based Recipes Using Native American Ingredients. In addition to 100 plant-based recipes with beautiful photography, the book also really teaches us about such important history. The history you learn in this book is fascinating and so important, especially now. We're joined today by Lois Ellen Frank, Native foods historian, educator, and chef, and owner of Red Mesa Cuisine. Walter Whitewater is a Diné chef at the Red Mesa Cuisine and winner of the James Lewis Award for his work as a Native chef. This book has already won 2 important awards. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today's guests, Lois Ellen Frank and Walter Whitewater, have been cooking and working together since the early 1990s. Their mission is to educate people on the history of Native American cuisine and the contributions Native peoples have given to some of the foods we eat every day: corn, beans, squash, chili, tomatoes, potatoes, vanilla, and cacao. Prior to 1492, these foods only existed in the Americas. They write about these foods, their history, and share 100 plant-based recipes in their new book, Seed to Plate, Soil to Sky: Modern Plant-Based Recipes Using Native American Ingredients. Lois Ellen Frank is a Native foods historian, educator, and chef and owner of Red Mesa Cuisine. Walter Whitewater is a Diné chef at Red Mesa Cuisine. And if you have any questions or comments for our guests, you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. This history is also so important at a time when the administration is doing whatever it can to erase non-white history in the Americas. We have another email from a listener who says, can you talk about how you know that prior to 1492, these foods only existed in the Americas? Lois, can you tell us more about that?
Sure. So I spent 11 years researching for my PhD, my doctoral dissertation, which was entitled The Discourse and Practice of Native American Cuisine, Native American Chefs, and Native American Cooks in Contemporary Southwest Kitchens. And during the 11 years, I was researching food and working with my committee at the University of New Mexico. This was the information from different references that we found through both Western science, archaeological evidence, and oral accounts in Native American communities. So that is how I use that information and was the foundation of this book from the research I did while I was getting my PhD.
And again, corn, beans, squash, chili, tomatoes, potatoes, vanilla, and cacao. And you call these foods the Magic Eight. What can you talk about how young people respond, especially young Native children? I mean, we've been doing a whole series on health and the fact that half of calories in the home come from ultra-processed foods now. And this is just across the country. And then even more when you eat out. And so, you know, kids eating at school are given these ultra-processed foods. How do young people respond when you share this information with them?
Well, originally that was going to be the title of the cookbook, The Magic Eight, and the publishers felt that people wouldn't know what we were talking about. But many of the elders, and Walter's going to follow me and talk a little bit more, you know, had concern about this. And we do work a lot with kids, and we start as young as 5 years old, and we empower them and give them skills and teach them about the ingredients, and they make foods. And it's very empowering. You know, we've been working on a state level in the state of New Mexico on something called New Mexico Grown and getting some of these foods into our school kitchens and cafeterias, our senior centers, our preschools, our schools' kitchens, and training those cooks and chefs. And so I think the response, and I'll let Walter, you know, the kids, they light up. They light up when they learn and they are empowered to cook. And you want to talk about some of your experiences with that?
Well, you have to tell your story of where you're coming from, how you're raised. And the way I was taught is like, you know, you learn from when you're still a kid. You learn that, you know, the grandma will talk to you about, there'll be a day and time, I'm not going to be here. So you learn. You learn how to cook, learn how to build the fire, you learn how to gather and all that. That teaching, the growing up, you grow up with it. And then in the longer run, you know, this is the field that I pick and working with kids. And just something that I learned, I pass it down to the little ones, you know, just something that you have to come down to their level. And, you know, like sometimes, like if you feel like you have to, if you have to get on your knee and get down to their eye level and talk to them and show them how to cut or show them how to do whatever it is, by the end of the day, they love whatever it is they made. They love to show off to their mom and dad. I think that's the reward at the end, just something that I have been experienced with then throughout, you know, as the older it gets, just something that, that you pass it down to others.
Yeah, and you build skills, you know. It's really easy to pull up to a convenience store and run in and buy some sort of fast food. And I think part of that is that there's a fear and there's a skill set not developed, you know. When we talk about life skills in schools, what are life skills? How to plant, how to grow, how to harvest, how to cook, how to eat. I think all of those are crucial, even in urban areas.
You know, and going back to the past, because this history is so important, especially when there are new studies out about, name the disease, diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure, cancer. And in Indian country, these chronic diseases are much higher. But there's a reason for that. And so you write about this in the section about the government issue period during which foods were imposed onto Native communities during the relocation and Indian reservation era of the 1800s. You write, the most historically traumatic and the most detrimental in terms of Native foods and traditional food ways. This is the period of forced relocation of Native peoples from their ancestral lands onto reservations. And fry bread and the Indian tacos were born from the government issue period. You write, this period is the most painful and most difficult in terms of wellness and health in Native American cuisine history. Can you talk more about that, Lois?
Sure. So, you know, the fry bread, which was born from this period, is what we would call a pan-Indian food, or a food that sort of almost every tribal nation, almost every registered tribe knows how to make. And there are some academics that like to use the term nutritional genocide. Mm. And so when these foods were distributed, there was a deliberate intention to make people sick as part of the extermination. You know, people wanted land. They wanted the land that Native people are on. That's why there was this forced relocation. And what's happening now is the younger generation is deciding to re-indigenize, to reclaim, to revitalize. I'm teaching on the college level this semester at IAI, which is the Institute of American Indian Arts. It's a small tribal college. And I tell my students, remember the re words, right? So re what? Revitalize, re-indigenize, reclaim. And these are important because this is the Native food revolution. This is how our youth, all youth, and, you know, type 2 diabetes doesn't see color. It doesn't see ethnicity. It doesn't see age. It's the Black Plague of this time. And so it's really important for all youth, all colors, to reclaim health and wellness. And this is going to be a move away from the processed foods. You know, we always say, can you eat a piece of fry bread? Sure. Can you eat a piece of fry bread every day, two or three times a day? No. Hmm.
Well, and you have a great recipe in your book called the No Fry Fry Bread.
And we love that.
And Chef Walter, I understand you've gotten really good at making a great no fry fry bread.
Yeah, from being as a Native man coming from the Dene, because in a Native world, especially for my culture, you don't really see Native men cooking. Yeah. Mostly they might be butchering or doing some field work or with animals, you know, and all that, you know. But when I started cooking, I think that's something that I kind of like hit out with grandma, and then the guys are coming, I jump out of there. So just by watching then the more I got myself involved in food, and it's like, well, you have to learn. You have to learn. And just, I think most of all, how it took off for me was just by feeling, just by watching what people did and how I fit. It worked out for me. And then I started cooking. I'm not the one that will, how the native people do. They do a lot of flapping, you know, going back and forth. Mine, I had to use my roller. So that's the way I do it. But there's certain technique that you come up with, and certain things that, you know, and a lot of people, they use milk in it. It does not work for me, you know, because it gives me air. It gives me like, once you change your diet, it changes. You will know the flavor. You will know the smell. You will know what it does to you. And that's one thing you learn from what you're eating, and it changes you.
And Walter brings up a really good point, which is that, me as a woman in a commercial kitchen, I'm the minority, and him, a Native man in a traditional kitchen, is the minority. So, you know, we become role models for both genders, that it's okay to cook. And, you know, Walter was one of the first chefs to cook in the James Beard House in New York City. And he's been a role model for these young Native boys that say, I want to be like you. I want to be a chef. And this is important, because I think in many communities, there are not enough positive role models. We're bombarded with the news. We're bombarded with horrible things. Mm-hmm. And students, I'm very solution orientated. So I like my students to think about, well, how can we solve that problem? What are some solutions? And I think Walter's a really good role model for the solution of how to reclaim, re-indigenize, revitalize health and wellness.
Well, and also, Walter, one of the themes that has come up on these shows we're doing about health is that, unfortunately, we're going in the wrong direction in this country when you look at the rates of cancer and chronic disease across the board. And talking about these issues are so important, because in order to be active members of your community, you have to be healthy. It's really hard to be active if you're not healthy. And so, I mean, we've been hearing from people who their parents have cancer, their loved one has Alzheimer's, and it affects their whole family, the caregiver. So that's why these shows are so important. Mm-hmm. And, you know, especially when you're talking about Indian country, when we had Jonathan Nez on, you know, we talked about how people are fighting still for clean water and electricity, and you have to be healthy in order to do that.
Yeah.
You know, what I realized about being healthy with food, because I watch the traditional food, and then, you know, you go to a ceremony or people preparing food. Then there's, let's say, an example for blue corn, and working and maybe making a mush or making a bread, whatever it is. It's like, what are they adding sugar to it? What are they adding these other things to it? And looking back, looking at the whole thing today, that's the reason why we have problems. Because where the government issue came in, that's what we got. And then we made it. We add sugar to it, we add cream to it, we add whatever it is, and that's why we have a problem today. So in our case, as a chef, as a cook, we're trying to change in another way. And an example, a couple of years ago, and doing a corn soup here in Santa Fe, and when you go to a restaurant or you work for a different chef, they always add heavy cream to it. And that did not make sense to me, or French or Italian, to do that. And so I took the heavy cream back out. It's supposed to be a corn soup and some herbs to it, and a secret chef, you know, chef secret, and he put it in with love. The same thing with when you do a salad dressing. It's always in the oil. When you're eating salad, it seems you always taste the oil first. So I took the oil back out. Oil is my water now. And then whatever the food is, I do, there's a ways that you can do making a salad dressing.
Make it healthier.
Make it even healthier. Mm. Beyond to using these other things that you don't really need that. And it's funny, one thing I always laugh about, these relatives, they run and they try to lose weight, then they drink Coca-Cola, and then they'll eat up Spam, whatever it is, potatoes, whatever it is, you know, to eat weight again. It's like, excuse me, that's not how you're going to lose weight.
Well, speaking of blue corn, I was really interested in this blue corn pasta. I don't think I've seen this one before.
Yeah, that's delicious. And it's fun. You know, it's an activity. It's a great family activity on a weekend to all get together and make pasta and roll it out and then eat it. I think one of the things, you know, that came up during COVID when everybody was home was this idea of, you know, again, I'm going to use a reword, reclaiming family time, reclaiming the family meal. You know, everybody's eating while they're driving or they're eating in front of the TV and they're not talking to each other. And there's this need, there's this want to be together, to reclaim the family unit, to try and, you know, regroup this idea of what is quality time and what is family time. And we think it's important to just slow down just a little and make time for these things, make time for your loved ones, make time for your children, even if it's one day a week.
Yes,
right?
Especially,
or one day every other week, whatever time you can squeeze in. It's quality time, it's quiet time, it's happy time, it's feeding time, it's food, it's wellness, it's health and wellness. And, you know, if you look at all these blue zones and all these areas where people are living, you know, into their centurions, well past 100, it really is more than just food. It's about family, it's about community, it's about ceremony, it's about sacred space, it's about creating an environment where you feel supported and loved. It's about appreciating the land and being grounded. Go out and take your shoes off, step on the earth, step on the sand, connect to the grounded. You know, we get so wound up in not being connected anymore. Connect to each other. This is all a vital part of health and wellness.
Yeah, Walter, what would you like to add?
Well, I'm with Lois, and you know, it's something that, and what, when you take your shoes off, or when you go back into your circle or ceremony, and you know, when you touch the ground without your shoe on, take your shoe off, you will know you're out of balance. And then that means you have to rebalance yourself, not just in the spiritually or through ceremony, but with the food waste. What I've been hearing in the past is like, don't forget your language, don't forget the ceremony, don't forget the culture. I always hear that, but I never heard anything about food. Maybe some people were taught, but with me, the food was very important. You know, food is our medicine. Mm-hmm. Always tell people, why is medicine? It's like, well, some of the herbs that we use, that we cook with, some of the herbs that we use in our ceremonies, or to make tea, or we do a rub, or we use a root, you know, that became our food too. And just something, that's the reason why I always tell people, food is our medicine, or it can destroy you too. It depends what you buy, what you get, what you're eating.
Right.
I know that, you know, I have an experience with that, you know.
It's affecting all of us, our family members, our loved ones. Today we're speaking with Walter Whitewater and Lois Ellen Frank about their beautiful new book, Seed to Plate, Soil to Sky, Modern Plant-Based Recipes Using Native American Ingredients. The Magic Eight. These are foods we eat every day. Corns, beans, squash, chili, tomatoes, potatoes, vanilla, and cacao. Prior to 1492, these foods only existed in the Americas. They write about the history of these foods. And then I love how you all did this. There are beautiful recipes and there are sections for the Magic Eight. So vanilla, for example, vanilla grilled peaches, vanilla melon salad, vanilla peach sauce. These are just beautiful, beautiful recipes. In our remaining minutes, a couple more questions from listeners. One listener asks, what is the best way to ensure that I'm buying some of these foods from Native people? And I love this question, Lois, because you actually have a resource in this book. It's a guide for native foods.
We do have a source guide. And, you know, you can Google, for instance, you know, you could say culinary ash, and you could look up and see that the culinary ash is made by a native-owned company. And then you can purchase from this. And, you know, one of the that came from COVID period was that some of the younger generation, the grandkids of the grandmas, set up these websites. And so you can find out, you can use the term hand harvested, native harvested, and do searches as in addition to the source guide that we came up with to buy native source foods. And what that does is that helps provide economic viability for these very small vendors, and they can live on their ancestral homeland, and you can purchase from them. And we feel that that's a really good way to support the Native American food movement and be involved, take ownership. You can do hand-harvested native wild rice and buy hand-harvested native wild rice on a canoe from vendors in Minnesota where the rice originated. So there are lots of ways to take ownership. And we invite all listeners and all people and all colors to get involved and join us on this journey of health and wellness and re-indigenizing, reinvigorating, revitalizing for all of us. Mm-hmm. We want all people to take ownership of the sustainability and the idea that we have one mother, one earth, and everybody's an earth citizen, and everybody can participate. And there's room for everybody to do so.
Oh, thank you. It is such a beautiful message, especially in today's times. Lois Ellen Frank is a Native Foods historian, educator, and chef and owner of Red Mesa Cuisine, a catering company in Santa Fe working in Native communities all over the Southwest. Walter Whitewater is a Diné chef at Red Mesa Cuisine. And their new book is so beautiful and so important, Seed to Plate, Soil to Sky, Modern Plant-Based Recipes Using Native American Ingredients. Lois and Walter, thank you so much for your important work, and thank you for joining us.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. And thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.